court.
Mr. Chief Justice.
May it please the court.
The panel acknowledged that the General Assembly pursued a political goal of increasing District 1's Republican vote share. It achieved that goal by moving Republicans into the district and Democrats out of the district.
Welcome to Episode 9 of While I Breathe, the official podcast of the ACLU of South Carolina. I'm your host, Jace Woodrum.
And I'm your other host, Paul Bowers. Jace, what are some things that make you proud to be a South Carolinian?
You know, I think what makes me the most proud are our lakes and rivers and our beaches. I love the water. I'm a water guy. It actually took me moving away and going to a landlocked state and a state with very little water, Colorado, to really appreciate the bodies of water that we have here and the joy that they bring me just by being on them. So that's probably my proud thing. What makes you proud to be a South Carolinian?
You know, Jace, I've got two things that spring to mind immediately. One is Blenheim Ginger Ale, Red Cap Extra Hot, those who know, know. The second thing is women's basketball team at my alma mater, University of South Carolina. National champs once again. Got to give it up for our Gamecocks.
Yeah, Dawn Staley makes me awfully proud.
Well, on today's episode, we're going to talk about something that makes me proud to be a South Carolinian, which is our rich heritage of freedom and the people who have worked generation after generation to defend it and expand it. People like you, Jace.
Ah, oh, shucks. Thanks, Paul. And really all of us at the ACLU of South Carolina, including one of our guests today, Alan Chaney, our legal director here at the ACLU of South Carolina, and the amazing Lynn Teague, Vice President for Issues and Action with the League of Women Voters of South Carolina.
I'm really excited for this conversation, Jace. It's always good to pick Alan's brain, but I'm especially excited to have Lynn as a guest. She's just one of the smartest people I know on voting rights and redistricting. We're going to be talking about a lawsuit that our team filed this week that seeks to end partisan gerrymandering in South Carolina.
Well, let's get into it.
Yep, let's get into it. Alan, Lynn, I wanted to start with what we call a vibe check. So the ACLU of South Carolina filed a major lawsuit this week to restore representative democracy. The League of Women Voters of South Carolina is the plaintiff. How are we feeling about it? How are we feeling today?
Yeah, I'll jump in first. I am really proud. I'm really proud of the work that we've done, proud of the work that the League has been doing for a long time. And it just feels really timely. Friday of last week was the final filing in Alexander, our racial gerrymandering suit. And to follow up on Monday morning, really taking legislators at their word and filing a partisan gerrymandering suit on Monday morning feels good. It feels like there's some symmetry there. We told folks when we got our bad opinion from the Supreme Court in Alexander that we were not giving up the fight. I think they probably took us a bit symbolically, and we meant it quite literally. We were not giving up the fight.
Yeah, we were not blowing smoke there. No. Lynn, how about you? How are you feeling today?
I'm just really glad we're doing this because there is no established legal precedent to address this incredibly important issue in South Carolina under the state constitution. And nothing is more fundamental than the right of voters to have an equal right to influence how they're governed. And that's really what we're fighting for.
Well, Alan, let's start with the news. The new lawsuit is League of Women Voters of South Carolina v. Alexander. It was filed just a couple days ago, Monday, July 29th. What are we arguing in this case, and what is the outcome that you hope for?
Yeah, to quote Justice Gorsuch from oral argument, we start as a given that this is a partisan gerrymander. And from that point, we're now asking the state Supreme Court, is partisan gerrymandering, which is a specific form of anti-democratic political corruption, does that violate any of the independent pro-democratic clauses that we have in our state constitution? I think specifically we're looking at the Free and Open Elections Clause, which is a clause that our state shares with a number of other states, and that a number of other state Supreme Courts have interpreted to apply strong protections against partisan gerrymandering. So we're asking the state Supreme Court, does it violate our state constitution when elected officials intentionally dilute the influence of specific voters and intentionally augment the influence of other voters, all while trying to create an artificial partisan advantage for the entrenched party. I think the clear answer to that is yes, it does violate the Free and Open Elections Clause. Our clause has an independent right for all eligible voters to have a right to elect officers. Our state Supreme Court interpreted that phrase in the 1930s to mean that all electors should have equal influence in elections. And that is not what we have right now. Voters voting in congressional races do not have equal influence over outcomes. We have a state with about 55% Republican voters, and Republicans have a stranglehold over 86% of our congressional seats. That's not equal influence, that's not just, and that's not constitutional.
I think a line, I'm paraphrasing this from one of the filings this week, is that in the state of South Carolina, Republicans get to vote with a megaphone while Democrats must vote from the bottom of a lake. And I think, yeah, that is an artistic way of putting it, but I think that's the reality here. And there are other states where the opposite is true. You know, both parties have used this tool to cement power, and either way that it's done, it's a distortion of democracy.
Yeah, either way it's done, it's drawing voters out of the process. It's drawing district boundaries to ensure that general election results are inevitable and it doesn't really matter what the voters think. And that has long-term consequences as well. It means that if an elected official takes over an office and does a whole bunch of things with their power that the majority of their voters don't like, the voters can't really do anything about that, because in inevitable elections are decided by primary voters, which is a very small portion of the electorate overall. And this just cascades year after year, election after election.
I'd like to point out that the League's national mission is empowering voters, protecting democracy. Clearly, this goes to the heart of our mission as an organization. We're a 104-year-old organization, and this is very fundamentally what we're about, empowering voters. You know, we question why we would even be doing all of this census and redistricting if the only intention was to allow people who already had power to hang on to power. That could be accomplished a lot more simply if that was what our Constitution meant to have happen.
So the new lawsuit filed this week is related in a way to our previous case involving gerrymandering. That was Alexander v. South Carolina NAACP. In that case, that one made it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court last year, but it was making a distinct claim. So let's rewind the tape a little bit. What claims were we making in that previous case, and how did that end?
Yeah, so the original lawsuit, which was filed in federal court and was heard initially by a 3-judge panel of federal judges, alleged that the congressional redistricting plan was a racial gerrymander. Essentially, it argued that lawmakers intentionally moved a substantial number of voters into and out of congressional districts because of the race of those voters, and that they didn't do so in order to comply with the Voting Rights Act, but for some other reason. Importantly, a racial gerrymandering claim doesn't really ask the why, it asks the how. It asks, did you move a substantial number of voters into and out of a district because of their race? It doesn't ask, why did you go about doing that? And that's important here because something can be both a racial gerrymander and a partisan gerrymander, which is what we were arguing in that case. So defendants came to court in trial and said, you know, we weren't trying to dilute the influence of Black voters. We were trying to dilute the influence of Democratic voters. We moved voters out of first congressional district to make it safe and easy for Nancy Mace to win re-election. We weren't doing so out of some sort of racial animus, which really isn't responsive to the question. The question there was, how did the legislature decide which voters to move? And so we argued that our expert analysis showed that the race of a voter was a better predictor of whether they got moved into or out of their district, that it was a better predictor than their partisan affiliation or their voting history. And that supported the inference that it was actually the race of voters that was driving who got moved during the redistricting plan in 2021 and 2022. Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court took a revisionist look at the facts in our case and decided for itself that we had not met our burden to show that voters were moved because of their race and not because of their voting history. Essentially, defendants argued that the map drawing process involved showing the voting history of specific precincts using the 2020 presidential election data. And so they were moving Biden voters out of the 1st Congressional District into the 6th Congressional District. And they were moving Trump voters out of the 6th Congressional District into the 1st Congressional District, all with a plan of ensuring that the 1st Congressional District, notwithstanding the fact that it had produced competitive elections in 2018 and 2020, that it would be a reliable Republican district for the next decade. So yeah, because the U.S. Supreme Court took a second and unfair look at the facts in our case and decided we had not proven that it was race instead of party that drove the selection of which voters were moved, they ruled that, albeit a partisan gerrymander, it was not a racial gerrymander. And in the opinion itself, Justice Alito refers to the Congressional Redistricting Plan as a political gerrymander. And as I mentioned, Justice Gorsuch at oral argument said, we start as a given that this is a partisan gerrymander. This is all important because in 2019, the U.S. Supreme Court had already ruled that partisan gerrymandering was not a claim that could be argued in federal court. So
that was the Rucho case, right?
Exactly, Rucho. Yeah. And so it was a defense in federal court for these lawmakers to say, we picked Biden voters and we shipped them out of CD1 so that they could not impact elections. And nothing about that admission offended the U.S. Constitution, according to this Supreme Court.
Importantly, though, it does offend the South Carolina Constitution, right? Let's get into that. What protections do we have as South Carolinians?
Yeah, the Free and Open Elections Clause, which guarantees every eligible voter an equal right to elect officers, is an independent constitutional provision in the South Carolina Constitution. There is no federal analog to the Free and Open Elections Clause. And in Rucho, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that partisan gerrymandering was not justiciable in federal court, it was very explicit that state courts were free to come to their own conclusions about analogous provisions or independent provisions that exist in their state constitutions. And South Carolina's constitution actually goes quite a bit further than the federal constitution when you're talking about protections for democracy and voting rights. There are several independent protections for the right to suffrage. There's the Free and Open Elections Clause. Our state Supreme Court has construed our Equal Protection Clause under state law to prohibit distorting electoral influence. And so there's a lot of independent guarantee of representational democracy in our state constitution that isn't necessarily the same as and goes much further than the federal constitution.
You know, I want to record a future episode about this, but those rights in our constitution date back to, I guess, 1868. You know, under Reconstruction, we had for the first time a majority Black legislature. And for obvious reasons, democracy and voting rights were front of mind. You know, when they were rewriting the state constitution, they wanted to be sure that people had equal rights at the polling place. And I think, you know, when we look back at our history, we have some of these strong protections in place because we were not always a democracy. We to this day are not always functioning as a representative democracy. I think, as we stated in the filing, South Carolina started out as an aristocracy, and it took real work, real courage to create and uphold an actual representative democracy.
Yeah, when we were researching the Free and Open Elections Clause, we actually went and read the notes from the 1868 Constitutional Convention. And the opening remarks of the gentleman who was elected sort of president over those proceedings are really quite profound. he notes that it was the first constitutional convention that was organized on the great acknowledged principles of democratic republicanism. And talking about all of the constitutional conventions that had come before it, he says, in the call for the five constitutional conventions which have preceded this, which were held in 1776, 1777, 1790, 1860, and 1865. The noble doctrine that governments were constituted for the good of the whole was substituted for that anti-republican one, that they were intended only for the benefit of one class at the expense of another. Those words really, really struck me. It was like acknowledgement at the time that everything that had come before was actually an affront to the promise of democracy that supposedly started in 1776 and 1790.
You know, as a 12th generation South Carolinian, I know one of my ancestors was elected to public office as one of the first five people in South Carolina ever elected to public office. And the description in the fundamental constitution then in 1670 was that there were five seats on the Grand Council for commoners. That's where South Carolina started. There were the aristocrats who obviously had a seat, and there were commoners to be elected by the settlers. And it's, you know, at times you get the feeling there are folks who really liked that system pretty well.
Right. Yeah. It's not a given that we will continue having a functioning democracy. We have to fight for it every generation.
Continue, Paul. We've lost it. That's what this lawsuit is.
Sorry, I'm being too sunshiny. Alan always tones down my optimism.
Again, I'd say I've lived through a lot of South Carolina history myself, and I know that, you know, I wasn't around for women not being able to vote, but I was around for women not being able to serve on state juries in South Carolina, and I definitely remember when it was not practical on the whole for many Black people to vote in this state. I mean, I grew up under the Jim Crow era. And, you know, we've come a long way since then, but our representative democracy remains an ideal that we're working towards and hoping not to slip back from.
I want to review like a very basic thing about the way legislative maps are drawn. We need to define the term redistricting. So the basics of this process are that every 10 years, the United States has a census, and then there is a process in each state to redraw the maps for legislative districts, both at the state house and in Congress. And you know, that process is contentious, and there are a lot of ways that people try to game it. But I wanted to just start by talking about that, because Lynn, you especially have been at the State House when this was happening. What can you tell people about that process and how it's really done?
Okay, well, the most basic thing that people need to understand is we are the only developed democracy that allows people to draw their own lines. This is considered an invitation to distortion in other countries that have seen what happened here and in developing their own constitutions have not chosen to go that way. The League began in 2017 trying to get an independent commission to draw lines. Even though we were not shooting for completely taking the General Assembly out of it, because that would require a constitutional revision amendment, we hope to have a citizen panel develop the maps. And this is not because of any... you know, you don't have to believe that anybody at the State House is inherently evil. This is human nature. If you allow people to have control over something that is so vital to how much power they personally have and how much power the people around them have, you're begging for trouble. And we got it. We failed to get an independent commission. And we, in fact, ended up with continued line drawing by the people most affected. You know, I went through, testified at many hearings. We drew our own maps. And throughout it, a recurring theme was that the League and many others who testified, including people for ACLU, saw this as being about the voters. And it became very clear that it was simply the mindset the built-in mindset at the State House that this was about them, not about the voters. It was about them. The League was accused at one point of trying to get rid of incumbents because the map we drew did not leave people in their own districts. Even though we had explained ourselves very clearly, it was hard for them to understand that we simply had not considered keeping them in their districts or taking them out. They were not a factor. They're very much a factor for them. It's about them. And so we went from public hearings and many people testifying, for example, that they wanted Charleston County kept intact. Residents of Charleston County saying they were tired of having their representation split up. But in the end, very little of that actually had any impact on the maps they drew. And we ended up once again with a problem. And it was only near the end of the process that became as bad as it became, with taking the entire Charleston Peninsula out of CD1 and putting it into CD6. I'm sitting right now in a fairly central part of Columbia, and I'm in the same congressional district with the South Abroad people in Charleston. That is ridiculous. That is absurd. It is beyond absurd. Redistricting is supposed to keep communities of interest together. It is supposed to reflect the population in that way and respect political boundaries. They didn't respect political boundaries. They certainly didn't respect communities of interest. The economics of the Port of Charleston are a really different thing than the economic base of Richland County here in Columbia, over 100 miles away.
Yeah, Charleston County was very infamously split up in this mm-hmm. in this redrawing. I think the term used in one of the lower court rulings was that Black voters were bleached out of District 1.
Yes.
In the part of Charleston County where I live, around North Charleston, there is a pretty distinct chunk of the county that was just drawn out. I'm gesturing. We're using an auditory medium here, but it's really stunning. It was very clear what was happening there. We're sharing a district. People living on the Battery, mm-hmm. folks who have traveled to Charleston know that sort of scenic tip of the peninsula. That is the same congressional district as parts of Columbia in the middle of the state. It's absurd on its face.
Yeah, and if you look across the water to the north or across the water to the south, you're seeing the first congressional district, which is completely cleaved in two now by the Charleston Peninsula. But to return to, I think, part of your question earlier, Paul, about the mechanics of redistricting, I think it's important to acknowledge that not every state does it the same way. The fact that South Carolina does it where legislators draw their own redistricting plans isn't inevitable. We could actually be doing it a different way entirely, and other states do it a different way entirely. And so to Lynn's point about the Independent Redistricting Commission, that they saw it through legislation in 2017 and 2018, there are potential legislative solutions to redistricting. The problem is that it's lawmakers that have to pass those solutions. And so there's just so much self-interest wrapped up there. And it's one thing in states that have a form of direct democracy. So in many states, citizens can get an issue put on the ballot, either to amend their constitutions or to pass general laws. South Carolina doesn't have any form of direct democracy. And so the extent to which voters can actually see their policy preferences put into action depends exclusively on elected officials doing their wishes. And one of the things about partisan gerrymandering is that all voters hate it and all elected officials seem to love it. As you mentioned earlier, Democrats partisan gerrymander in New York and Republicans partisan gerrymander in South Carolina, and voters in New York and South Carolina hate it.
Yeah, the respected Winthrop poll polled on this issue and found that a phenomenally strong percentage, regardless of party, wanted an independently drawn redistricting process and did not get it.
Yeah, I think there are highly technical reasons that you can oppose gerrymandering, but I think even someone like me, who's never been to law school and is just sort of learning about this, can understand that it is about fundamentally cheating. Gerrymandering is a process where politicians choose their voters rather than vice versa. And you don't have to have some sophisticated understanding of the law to understand that's wrong. That's not what we stand for as a country or a state. I have one more question. This is something I was hoping both of y'all could speak to. So in the petition for original jurisdiction filed this week, the legal team writes, in the case of extreme political gerrymandering, this court stands as the last bastion against unchecked legislative tyranny. End quote. Tyranny is a strong word, obviously. Why do you use it here? Why do you think it applies?
When you cut voters out of democracy, you don't have a democracy anymore. You have tyranny. And that's what they've done, right? They've created a congressional redistricting plan where the voters don't really have a lot of accountability to wield. We are in a political reality with two major parties, and a candidate from one of those two major parties is going to win virtually all elections. That's at least true in South Carolina right now. And so when it is inevitable which party is going to secure the victory in any particular seat, there's just a lack of responsiveness and accountability between elected officials and the voters, such that elected officials can virtually go do anything they want without any meaningful rebuke to be expected from the voters. And that sounds a lot like tyranny to me.
We know that we need checks and balances. That's fundamental to the way our government is supposed to work. And so in this case, we are hoping and trusting that our judiciary will, in fact, serve in that important role.
Well, that's all I had for y'all. Lynn, is there anything else that you think we should talk about just from your experiences in the state house and in redistricting?
Nothing you'd want on a podcast.
I'll take you out for a drink sometime. Yeah.
Yeah. Glass of wine sometime when you're in Columbia, and we can talk.
Sounds good.
This has been episode 9 of While I Breathe, a podcast production of the ACLU of South Carolina.
You know, we get into the weeds sometimes, and Ellen is really helpful when it comes to explaining complicated legal matters to someone like me who's never been to law school. But when it comes to partisan gerrymandering, he always brings it back to the fact that they're cheating. Our state lawmakers are cheating. They drew these maps to their own advantage, and I think anybody can understand it's an injustice.
Yeah, and we wouldn't accept it if Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks were cheating. So why are we accepting it when our lawmakers do it, when our lawmakers rig the system to make sure that they win?
And they never would, Jace. My coach never would. Don't you say that.
We're going back to court because we're not going to accept this kind of cheating. We're glad you're going to be there with us.
I think a lot of people took it as a figure of speech when we said we'd keep fighting after that 6-3 U.S. Supreme Court ruling back in May, but we really meant it. We're proud to continue this work, and we'll keep you updated. If you want updates on our work, our website is aclusc.org. Please spread the word, share this podcast episode with your friends who care about democracy, and if you think of it, give us a rating on whatever platform you use to listen to podcasts. It helps us spread the news. Music on our podcast is by Daft Hartley.
Thanks for listening to the podcast, and until next time, while I breathe, I hope.
The panel acknowledged. Acknowledged that the General Assembly pursued a political goal of increasing District 1's Republican vote share. It achieved that goal by moving Republicans into the district and Democrats out of the district.